Welcome in, latest Marler Monday. I just wished Chris a Merry Christmas, and he told me to F myself, so feel free to flame him away in the comments. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, my. Hold on. Let's just get this out of the way now. Let me just... Oh, that is me snorting all the tweets, all the tears, all the dumb fucking comments in from this group specifically about that Alabama-Oklahoma game. And I mean just... Everything I said was going to happen in the first game finally happened in the second game. I emotionally hedged, and I played it beautifully. And here we go.
Wait, hey, so Notre Dame shouldn't have been in?
I got to probably cool it on that.
You're going to continue. You will cease to attack Big J Journal, who thinks that Notre Dame's God's gift to football?
That part I will not stop doing. The fan base I should probably leave alone a little bit. I will also tell you that I was like, oh man, my Twitter numbers are a little bit bigger than normal. Like a lot more views. And I looked and saw that I tweeted 76 times on Saturday. That is too many. Also, I do love Ole Miss.
Oh, Morgan Freeman, shout out. Is his hand gone?
His hand is gone.
I didn't know he was played stubs originally from Happy Gilmore, but
ooh, GCSU in the playoffs. I do love that. I do love that.
So no, in all seriousness, so Alabama, the better team won, you think, here in Norman, 34-24?
Yeah, 1,000%. They should have won the first time.
Well, how did Oklahoma get up 17-0 then if Bama's so damn good?
I don't know. How'd they fail to score in the last, in the next 35 minutes, Mike? I mean, listen, all we heard, hold on, get this shit off the screen, put my fat face on here. Here's the thing. I said Bama got lucky. I will fucking find where you live. Allie's family's in the other room right now, so I can't really cuss. I will find where you fucking live, Brodo. Love you, Brodo. Here's the deal. I said this during the first game about Oklahoma, which was like, hey, they have a tendency to turn the ball over all the time. They have a tendency to do all these different things that are pretty detrimental to winning football games, and they do it consistently. Alabama hasn't really done that this season besides Florida State. They had kind of righted the ship. Three turnovers. They had three of them, or two of the three were inside their own 30-yard line. One of them with Ryan Williams back returning punts for some reason. Multiple drop passes, a missed 36-yard field goal. You saw what it looks like when the shoe's on the other foot on Saturday. And that's the Oklahoma team that we saw for most of October. Great game against Tennessee, but that's the Oklahoma offense we saw for most of October. And when one or two things don't go your way, you had a dropped pass. The dropped pass that could have made it 24-7 then results into that. Then the next play, a dropped punt somehow, which was insane. Those are all horrible luck things to happen. I totally get it. But what the fuck do you think happened in the first game between these two? It just goes to show you that, yeah, I do think the best team won. I think Oklahoma's defense is awesome. They got made to look pretty bad in two games against a quarterback that everyone had written off.
Well, if Alabama's God's gift to football, why did they almost lose to Carolina? Kind of look like shit against LSU.
Yeah.
Did lose to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
They largely dominated Auburn. I'll give you that. But again, even maybe the second half was like a stalemate, but Bama made the critical fourth down play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long stretch for an elite team to...
That's the whole season, right? Who said they were elite? I said they were better than Oklahoma. Don't put words in my mouth. I'm trying to put elite. Questions in there right now.
Oklahoma is elite.
They have an elite defense, and they had the best kicker in the country.
Yeah.
And that part was hysterical, by the way. For someone else to finally have kicking issues, that part was fucking hysterical. No, I think that it is... they're not an elite team. I said this last week. I don't think Bama has the ability to beat Georgia, has the ability to beat Ohio State, Indiana, or Texas Tech. Probably not even Oregon. I don't know. They had the ability to beat Oklahoma. And I tell you what, I'll say this again, and I'll keep saying it. I don't think that they can beat Indiana because I think Indiana is really good. Have we seen Indiana play a really good team like besides Ohio State this year? We saw them trounce Illinois at home. We saw them beat...
The only teams that beat Oregon and Ohio State are the only ones I respect.
Those are two really good wins. I think Bama's resume is a lot better than that. And again, what I will take more than anything is I love the fact that in this game, the team that's being patted on the back, the team that's being told they're going to win no matter what, the team that's undefeated, has the Heisman Trophy winner, has the best coach in college football for the second year in a row, at least from an award standpoint, is Indiana. So, yeah, I mean, listen, Tucker Wakeland, can't argue that. Seems like a great point, probably not rooted in any kind of team bias at all. Yeah, Broda does make a good point here. Ty Simpson not knowing multiple quotes is frustrating. He was like, what did Kobe say? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. No, he didn't say that. He didn't know 50 Cent. That was tough. That was a tough look for a white quarterback.
Have you seen the stat that Alabama, so they're, what, a 7-point dog, I think, against Indiana? The last time they were this big of underdog, do you know?
Yeah, I do. 2021 SEC Championship game.
No. I think that was five and a half, six.
It was seven.
No.
Okay, when was it?
SEC Championship against Urban Meyer and Tebow. Saban's, what had that been, second year?
That was 2008. They lost by, well, if it was 2009, I'm sure that 2009 they weren't a 7-point underdog. 2008, that makes sense. Well, actually, I don't know, because they were number one that year and Florida was number two. I mean, let's see here. I don't know. He's my boss. I'm not going to answer that.
I'm your boss.
Not you. Someone said, Marvel, okay. Why is the guy from Lawton LSU? There was, what was the other comment that was made? Indiana's going to shock Bama. It's hard to do that as a 7-point favorite. And that's my point.
Hey, you've been nailing all these Texas takes. So now Longhorn Nation is out on me. Oh, well, they're always out on me. I said, I still like John Mateer better than Arch. What's your thoughts on that?
Maybe in September.
I mean, September happened, didn't it?
Yeah.
What about October?
Who didn't they play each other in a game?
Right. Is John Mateer facing Arch on the field at the same time? I don't believe that ever happens.
Yeah, Arch played defense. If you ask any Texas fan, you would know that.
What about the Kentucky everything. Game?
Arch is a single.
What about the Florida game? Football? What about the Mississippi State where they had to come back? Did these games not happen? What about the Georgia game? Did that not happen?
Let me ask a serious question.
Uh-huh.
Does this Texas team beat Kentucky, Vandy, or Mississippi State with John Mateer at quarterback instead of Arch? Because Arch was pretty good in those games.
Do they win? Yeah, John Mateer. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, it's hard to argue that, but I figured I probably shouldn't.
What running back would Texas take over one of Oklahoma's?
Does Oklahoma have running backs?
Exactly. How many receivers would they take over Oklahoma's?
Just Topanga, my first childhood crush.
Or can you even name a tight end on Oklahoma's roster?
No, not for Saturday. Their season's over.
Point being, he is the offense. Here's the thing.
I don't have to either because their season's over. They're going home. I think that Arch is really good at times this year. He was really bad early to start, though. He was bad for a month. Like he was bad for like. Not really interceptions as much, but like his arm looked weak. His arm almost looked like Nussmeier. Like I thought he was injured because it was like the way he was throwing, he kept dropping to his sidearm too. My tear was hurt. Then fucking sit his ass out. Like, I mean, I don't want to hear any, I don't want to hear a single.
You got to dance with the one that brought you there, Marler. I'm surprised you didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what Ty Simpson said. Quote, Michael Jordan. I do know that the comment section is pretty light today because I don't see any Oklahoma fans in here.
No, they're on sabbatical. They're on it's Christmas break. You know what? But what? Any thoughts on? Because you've been covering this league a long time. Muschamp to Texas, and again, we can't say anything. Everything you said about Texas and their fan base and their media is 100% accurate. I will back it up. So we can't critique this. We can't objectively look at the numbers, but. They had an elite defensive coordinator by the numbers.
I didn't get that at all. I that was shocking to me. Now, is it a stretch or an overreach, him trying to do something like get a win over Georgia? I don't think so. I'm serious. That's of course what Georgia fans are asking. Right. I don't think so. But it's still one of those things. It's like pretty shocking to watch and say like, well, you know, are they any good? Defensively in comparison to last year. I mean, they had struggles, but I don't think they were a bad defense at all. Like, I guess the other part though, too, is if I'm trying to give Sark an excuse, which I will love to always do, is you had arguably going into the season the best player at each level of defense in the SEC. Like, if you want to call what's his name an edge rusher, and then you had a linebacker, you had I always mix them up, Hill, and then what's the other one's name?
Simmons and Hill, you're talking about?
Yeah. And so then you talk about like Michael Taffy. Taffy. I can't stand
Laffy Taffy.
Laffy Taffy, because he talks about Texas the same way the media does, which is like, we should have won. We barely lost that game to Georgia. You're like, you lost by 25, dude. Shut the fuck up. I think those three players coming into the season with where they were, like how like highly regarded they were, how talented you should have been still on defense, even though they lost a ton of talent. I mean, maybe that's why they, like you can point to saying why it was reasonable to fire him, but firing him for Will Muschamp. I mean, we were talking about the Texas DC going into this year as one of the best coordinators on either side of the ball in the entire country. And now all of a sudden we're like, he's out of a job for Will. He's basically out of a job for fucking defensive Mike Bobo. Like it is, and we need term limits. We need term limits, not just for Congress. We need him for SEC coaches. This is absurd. This is his seventh team in the SEC.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the offense has regressed it for the last 3 years in scoring efficiency. So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, take that what you will. This is a kind of chips all in, I guess, on Muschamp, don't you think?
I guess it's also weird. I talked to somebody in Athens this weekend, and they were telling me how surprised they were because Kirby wanted like to keep him on staff as an analyst. He seemed very happy because he was able to still make a lot of games, or I guess he was living in Athens. He was still able to go like, or was he an analyst for Georgia this year?
No, this year he was living in Nashville.
Okay, so I don't think he was living in Nashville. From what I was told, he was still living in Athens, but making like the trek to Nashville for his son. I could be wrong about that.
I know he had a place here in Nashville. I know that. Yeah.
So it seemed like he was in a pretty good setup. There's part of me that thinks that that's just like not worth the stress. But here's the one thing I do know, Mike, is from a recruiting standpoint, I don't know how good of a defensive coordinator he's going to be. I would assume he would be pretty good. Maybe he's lost a step or two. I don't know. I don't think it's like a Jimbo Fisher offensive coordinator play calling situation. I don't think he's like lost that much of his fastball. I do know that one thing about Will Muschamp that's the same as Kirby, it's the same as a lot of other coaches from that Saban tree. One thing about him that has not like dropped off at all, he's still a really good recruiter. And no one probably knows how to recruit this conference better across the entire landscape and footprint of it than Will Muschamp. That sounded so smart too, by the way. But landscape and footprint? What am I talking about, huh?
You're a genius.
I know.
Any shot, and I'm not 100% with Ronnie here, Sark on the hot seat. I don't think he's on the hot seat. But any shot that Will Muschamp is looking at this situation and saying, hey, if the defense is dominant next year and for whatever reason we screw it up on offense for Texas, maybe Sark is let go or goes to the NFL or whatever, and he can step in and be like the Coach O that takes this thing as an interim and maybe keeps the job.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen.
I mean, could that be at all part of his thought process, though?
Maybe. I mean, and like this is where he was supposed to. Remember, he was the original coach in waiting. Also, real quick, Army EP6FZ. Happy Christmas to you as well, brother. Appreciate that. It was really nice. I mean, he could do that. I don't think that's part of his thought process. Like, does he want to be a head coach?
I think they all want to be head coaches.
That's so weird to me. I would not want to do that. I want as little responsibility as possible. I want to sit here and eat my pretzels and talk shit.
Well, you're doing that pretty well. Speaking of talking shit, let's hear you talk your damn talk against A&M, losing 10-3. What a shit show this was. They're calling A&M's frauds now. Are they frauds?
Somebody nailed this pick. I forgot who it was, Mike. Somebody said this is a real bad matchup for Texas A&M.
Who was it?
It was me.
Just everything's coming up Marler these days. Yeah, you know what?
It took long enough, dude. It took long enough. I do celebrate Christmas and Kwanzaa and Hanukkah because I love to eat everything in excess. With A&M, I said this before the game, the saddest part about this game, no matter what, was going to be the low-hanging fruit jokes that were made about how neither team can win at all or whatever. Here's the thing that I thought was most upsetting for A&M. the offense played really well against a really good defense. The offensive line didn't, and they were kind of one-dimensional, but I thought the offense played pretty well. The defense, for the first time in I don't know how long, felt like they were the elite unit. And now let me make sure I phrase this correctly, because I know Brodo's in here and he's probably getting wetter than a cafeteria floor. I mean elite unit as like the unit of defense, like the defensive unit, not anything sexual at all. But if you want to take it that way, feel free, my guy. So
Brodo doesn't miss.
No, he doesn't. He's pretty good. So here's the thing. I think that the defense played really, really well for four quarters, and they probably deserve to win that game. But they, at the same time, you got to think about all the things that might that went wrong for Miami. Like, they've moved the ball pretty well at times in between the 20s, or at least like up until they got to midfield. All the missed field goals they had. I mean, they held Carson Beck in check for a long time, but it was like, at some point, man, it wasn't like they were, if they were the road team and they were like barely hanging on, it felt like, yeah, at some point, maybe they'll catch a break and put one away. But you were at home. Like, you had the entire like momentum and advantage that you could have wanted with the 12th man. It sucks. It was an 11 o'clock game, but like that place was rocking. And it felt like once it got to the second half, it just got quieter and quieter until the fourth quarter, because it was like, it felt like that A&M fans started to kind of believe they knew what was coming with the battered Aggie syndrome again. The Marcel Reed interception, man, that's like he's off on that throw by like 0.2 seconds and like maybe 2 yards. If he leads that guy by 2 yards, we are talking about Marcel Reed having his next year's Heisman moment like already. And like just it's a game of inches, obviously, with the cliches. Ty Simpson said that. It's like from Aristotle. And so, you know, that's a great quote, but it's one of those things too, where it's like, how are they going to turn the corner? Like, what else do they need at A&M to turn the corner? I don't know if I have the answer for that.
Well, they need to be able to finish the season. All right. It's only been 2 years, but they started, I believe, 7-1 last year, finished 8-5, started this year, 11-0, finished of course, 11-2. Do you think, you know, there's a lot of people questioning Coach Elko and his ability to finish strong. Are you buying that, or is it too early?
That's why I always finish early, baby.
I mean, they took a massive step forward. You know, there's always something to pick apart, but that and that's I think that's a fair criticism right now.
I will say that for him, the finishing thing is like, I don't think it's fair. You played like. I would probably make the argument about this. That team beat Notre Dame on the road. Pretty fortunate to do so, right? It's fourth and goal from the 15. They don't have a holding call. They go on the road and beat Notre Dame. Didn't look great against Auburn. Kind of boat raced some other teams. That Arkansas game was like a 10-point game until Arkansas scored like a couple minutes left.
Right.
Destroyed LSU. And then I think we looked at that LSU game and we were like, man, this might be the best team in the country. And you kind of go back and you're like, wait a second, why would they be the best team in the country? Everyone they've beaten is bad. And so I will say this again, and it's something I firmly, firmly believe in. That's God and our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Well, Florida, in fairness, Florida, this was right after they whooped Texas ass.
Sure. Anyway, back to my comments about the Lord.
I mean, it wasn't it?
I mean, I guess, but my point is the team went 4-8. And like, and they got them at home too. It's not like they had to go win on the road. Like, pull the thing back up. They went and beat LSU like a drum. That was on the road. Missouri, I think, had a backup quarterback for most of that game, who's a freshman, by the way, third string quarterback to start the season. They should have lost to South Carolina, found a miracle way to beat that team. That team was 4-8. Sanford also had a coaching change. So even your FCS team was dog shit. And then you finally had to play someone that's like, here's the thing, Mike. They had to go play somebody that's equally as talented and also was equally, like, I think, coached in an environment on the road. That is like, there's no chance. Like, they became someone's Super Bowl finally. Listen, LSU has been this team's Super Bowl forever. Notre Dame was probably circled for fucking months on this offseason calendar for A&M because of what happened last year when they started their season. And you think about maybe how different the season would have been if they would have started 8-0 if they won that game. Like, going to Texas, it felt like we all knew what was going to come. And that was a little brother reemerging, because they don't have like the ability yet, I think, to like break out of that shell and prove to everyone that they aren't little brother. And listen, it felt like I said this the other day on Twitter and Instagram in a video I did for on a different show, and I kept referring to it as like a paper tiger. It's great to win 11 games. It's great to make the playoff. It's awesome to have all those things. That's the whole point of playing these fucking games, right? You want to win as many as possible. You want to get to the playoff and put yourself in a position to win the national championship. Obviously, it was a great season. I would like to know who I am and what my fucking identity is as a team going into the postseason. And I don't think that A&M knew that. Like, that's when they had to figure, like, have like their metal tested or whatever cliche phrase you or Ty Simpson want to make. They failed and fell flat on their face over and over and over again in that Texas game. And like, listen, and that's a Texas team that, like you said, played it not the most difficult schedule and also lost to Florida. Like, this wasn't last year's Texas team. It wasn't even like the Texas team from the year before. And you still found a way to lose to them by double digits. And so I think that there's a culture of winning that they are establishing there under Mike Elko, but they still need to figure out a way to say, like, when we come out of this locker room, people need to fear Texas A&M. And I don't think people fear Texas A&M. I'll say this again. As a Bama guy, I wanted A&M in Atlanta. I didn't want Georgia. I don't ever want Georgia. Like, I wanted A&M in Atlanta because A&M is not a great team this year. They just played the easiest fucking schedule in the SEC imaginable.
How big of a risk? I know a lot can change, but as currently constituted, next season, A&M, it looks like they're going to stick with Marcel Reed. Again, that could change. Yeah. I think they should. You know, again, it's easy to dismiss people, but can you guarantee me that you're going to upgrade from him? I don't think you cannot. You can. But more, Marcel Reed and an offensive coordinator who I asked you about last week, I don't know if you even know who he is, even though he was at your school for a long time. Holloman Wiggins, who's got no play calling experience as your offensive coordinator. This seems like a really dangerous risk to me for A&M.
To keep Reed?
Combined with an offensive coordinator that has never called plays, for A&M, fair or not, Chris, I think this is where we're going to be in the SEC. You make the playoff the next year, like, if you don't, this is a fucking failure.
That's fair.
For all these teams, right? Yeah. For Texas, this was a failure. If Oklahoma doesn't make the playoff next year, it's a failure. This year, Tennessee, failure. Like, that's the expectation.
Mike Bratton, failure.
Well, that goes without saying. But if you're telling me that you're bringing this quarterback back, that seems like everybody hates him except for A&M, and then teaming him with an offensive coordinator that's never done it, is it realistic for them to get back to the playoff? That seems like a huge gamble that I don't understand why Mike Elko's taking that.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you had to make a hire because Colin Klein's leaving no matter what. But I think that's it goes back to the thing about that I just felt like that people haven't really talked enough about when it comes to the success of a head coach. We are so quick, especially in the offseason, to make these stupid rankings and, you know, top 10 head coaches, top 25 head coaches, who are the best coaches in the SEC. And it's like, so much of that is based on, can you fucking recruit, for one? Can you get in the portal and have people that want to come play for you? And more than anything, can you make the right hires at the coordinator position? Because if you don't, you see what it looks like from time to time when you have a elite guy on one side and a trash bag on the other. Or if you have, you know, a great coach with two bad hires, like, it's hard to win national championships. Like, and we've gotten to this mindset too of like, if you don't win a title, somehow like your season is trash, which is really stupid. A&M hasn't won a national title since 1939. Besides volleyball, they did win one on Sunday for volleyball, which is great. I think Reed is the answer, and I think he's only going to progress. And I loved what Mike Elko said about him saying, I think he's still scratching the surface of what he can become, and the ceiling is so much higher than he's playing at right now. I agree with that. What I want to see from Marcel Reed is we see the electric ability of him in big plays with his arm and legs, right? We know what he can do with his legs, but we see the big playability with both. They gave him two receivers this year that were great, and that made the offense look fantastic. Here's the worry I have. Does Marcel Reed next year, and I'm not talking about injuries, but next year, does he become this next year's Garrett Nussmeier? Because Garrett Nussmeier had an incredible season in 2024, And he did so behind the best offensive line in the history of the program. Four guys that went to the NFL. This was an offensive line that had 177 combined starts. That fucking dumbass left tackle that decided to open his mouth and start talking shit about the best edge rusher in college football. That was insane. They gave up seven sacks to Miami, and they gave up eight in their final two games that are both losses. So, like, I feel like if he's going to regress or if he's going to progress, they better make sure they have another receiver there for him. They better have a run game for him because they were pretty hampered by injuries in the run game this year. But more importantly, he better not have to run for his life behind a bad offensive line, because if he does, then I think that ceiling becomes much lower.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, we've gotten this far. We haven't even talked about another playoff.
And we won't.
Victory for the SEC.
David Chambers
team beat Tulane 41-10. Suck it, Marler. We know you hate the Rebs. We know you hate Pete Golding because you're from Bama. And I guess if you root for Bama, you have to say Pete Golding is trash. Shout out Pete Golding. He's got the best winning percentage in the SEC of all time.
I'm going to do a Morgan Freeman impression and get canceled. No, why? No, that's bad. So the Ole Miss game was awesome. It's the I said this last week. I think that everybody in the country is pulling for Ole Miss, as they should. Like
not Kiffin.
What?
Well, I guess Kiffin is, because he gets bonuses.
That's fucking unbelievable, dude.
Not the governor of Louisiana.
Yeah, total fucking nut job, by the way.
But you said everybody. Not that, Mississippi State fans.
Please put what Purple Hayes said up on the screen, because that's incredible. All of these things happened on Saturday. Also, I didn't know who Bella Danger was, and I had to Google it, which is not a safe Google. Don't do that.
Cousin Shane informed me. I didn't know either.
Yeah, I wasn't super impressed. I don't really – that's just not for me. Mm-mm. Anyway, so the only reason I had to look it up is because I was, like, scrolling my timeline, and the only other person that's been more unhinged from a media perspective, I feel like, and more combative and argumentative is Bud Elliott. And Bud Elliott, I just – out of no context, I just see him tweet – yeah, not a big porn guy. And I was like, okay, like, why are you talking about this? Anyway, so hopefully Allie's parents didn't hear that. that's tough. So the Ole Miss game, back to the Ole Miss game, and I do want to give them their flowers because they deserve every single bit of it. All my feelings on Ole Miss, okay? I think everyone in the country's pulling for them. I think that they are, especially in the first round. It's hard to not like pull for like a Tulane, like a G5 team that's coming in here and hopefully pulling off this like March Madness style upset and all that kind of shit. But I look at Ole Miss, and I think all the stuff that they have gone through, the way they have handled the Lane Kiffin thing, I don't think any of it's really been their fault. There's a couple things I probably would have done differently, but whatever. And them having a situation on Saturday where they had a home game in Oxford, they really dressed that up like. We got a playoff game in Oxford. And it's like Oxford just became relevant, in my opinion, like in the last 3 years. But it's become very relevant in those 3 years. They had that big win against LSU in 2023. You saw the big win against Georgia last year. They go basically one quarter away from being 12-0 this year. An incredible season. And if you aren't fucking in love with the way that Pete Golding has carried himself during any of this, you're out of your mind. Because watching Pete Golding come up there and just – it's Marler Monday, but at the podium, he's just fucking riffing, saying cuss words, saying what everyone wants to hear, because I think it's like he's almost like a mouthpiece and a sounding board for what the fans have been wanting to say for a while. Like the question somebody asked him was like, what's the most different thing that's happened in the building since the coaching change? He's like, what used to be over here? We don't have a fucking – basketball goal in here anymore. And I thought that was awesome. I loved every single thing that happened on Saturday. I told you this too, Mike. Again, everything came up Marlo this week, and I was pretty spot on with most of the games. And that was, I didn't think anybody in the country was going to play with a bigger chip on their shoulder than Ole Miss. And the way they came out swinging out of the gates and went right down the field and scored in the first 51 seconds, thought it was incredible. That next game in the Sugar Bowl against Georgia, it's hard to beat a team twice for one, but I fully expect, and I'll be there in the Superdome, credentialed and everything. I'm very excited about it. I fully expect to see droves and fucking droves of powder blue and teams coming in here, or I'm sorry, Ole Miss fans coming in here and taking over the city. I don't think Georgia fans are going to want to travel for this one nearly as much as Ole Miss fans. Not saying they won't, but I think Ole Miss fans, like, I just did an article that we just posted on LouisianaSports.net about what every team wants for Christmas, every fan base wants for Christmas. And the thing I said for Ole Miss is, I think, pretty spot on, which is they just want the season to keep going. And more than anything, like, beating Georgia and winning a Sugar Bowl, awesome. Getting to or winning a national title, fucking incredible. But I think deep down what this fan base wants more than anything is to prove to everyone that, like, we're still going to be good without Lane Kiffin. And this whole season is not just because of Lane Kiffin. And I love what Golding said about the Charlie Weiss thing. I loved everything else he said. The Santa hat thing was pretty fucking stupid. But everything else that he did this weekend was awesome. I know, I saw it.
You know, one thing that you mentioned, a lot of what Pete Golding had to say, and I'm right there with you. I mean, it was, I think it was like 27 minutes. Almost all of it is worth a listen to. But one thing I think has been misconstrued, I'm seeing some people online kind of ran with it, where he credits Charlie Weiss for running the offense.
Yeah.
But it, people ran with it as like, this Lane Kiffin's got nothing to do with our success. It's Charlie Weiss. But yeah, it was more about not having, you know, nobody had more to prove in that game than Charlie Weiss, because everybody thinks it's Lane Kiffin's offense, which obviously it is with his fingerprints all over it. But Charlie Weiss did a hell of a job. And if they light up Georgia, huge if, because Georgia's playing a hell of a lot better on defense now.
Yeah.
But if they light them up, I mean, I think it's just going to serve to that the stock for Charlie Weiss will continue to soar.
As it should. I mean, like, that's the other thing, too. I think that Ole Miss has kind of been a fun, like, Trojan horse for, I guess, which is like, it's cool to see Pete Golding kind of like show everything behind the scenes of like, hey, this is exactly what we think. This is how this thing has been run. You have to credit these players, and like, and it doesn't feel like coach speak for the first time, right? Yeah, for sure. You want to see how much of this mic I can fit in my mouth? No, but I think it's great. And Charlie Weiss was incredible. Now, here's the thing, though. Future LSU offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss did call a hell of a game. And I think the next thing for me is, does Trinidad go to LSU or does he stay at Ole Miss? I saw odds on it a couple weeks ago, which was how many players from Ole Miss are going to come to LSU in the transfer portal. And the number the Vegas set was 7.5. I was surprised it was that high, because I know we kind of hear from both sides, and it's like, Lane Kiffin's a player's coach, blah, 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 he's going to be great, versus Ole Miss fans and some players that feel like he kind of like left them and shouldn't have, and the way he left obviously was pretty bad. I think it'll be interesting to see who comes with him. I think Kewon Lacy will come with him, just my hunch. But either way, what I also don't want to see happen with Ole Miss in this story this year is have it be anything like the 2023 shit or 2022 shit we had with Ole Miss and Auburn, which was like, if Auburn comes to, or Kiffin comes to Auburn, is he going to take Quinshon Judkins with him? And like, we got like, enjoy this team, enjoy this moment, and enjoy this path they're on right now, because this, it's hard to win these games, guys. Like, it's very hard to win a national title. Very hard. And having Ole Miss of all teams, you think about where they've been throughout their history, for them to be in the thick of it, like, let's just keep enjoying what's happening right now, because I personally want to hear more from Pete Golding. I want to see more of Trinidad Chambliss and Kewon Lacy in those uniforms in this year's playoff.
Hey, I got a hot take for you. I'm going to see if you agree with it. I think we'll have more LSU players transfer to Ole Miss then we'll have Ole Miss players transfer to LSU due to Frank Wilson mainly, but also because of Austin Thomas and Kelvin Shepard, I think is his name, that the personnel people. I would anticipate more LSU players going to Ole Miss.
I don't think that'll happen, but I think you're going to see a lot of LSU players into the portal. And I think part of that will be, is Kiffin going to go in here and make everyone feel like they're wanted? Or is he like, this is just a real question that I have. And from a professional standpoint, I'm hoping that Lane Kiffin and LSU works, because I cannot wait to cover this for the next several years. Like, it's going to be awesome. And, like, can't wait to go to the press conference, all that kind of stuff. But it felt kind of refreshing to see the coach from the other team that was his subordinate making, like, effortless jokes and not things that feel like they're kind of, like, forced and, like, weird and those kind of things.
Right.
I think the big question for me is he going to come in here and adopt this mindset and this role of being, like, the villain that everyone hates, which he's very familiar with? But, and I said this on a show with you a couple weeks ago, where, like, he's very familiar with that. He didn't have a tremendous amount of success with that. Like, not as a head coach. And he was terrible at Tennessee. He was terrible with the Raiders. Like, he was okay at FAU, but that was, like, part of, like, the rehab assignment where he was, like, off, but no one really cared. And then his first couple years, you think about the get your popcorn ready, and they got their fucking doors blown off by Alabama in that game. So, like, I think where he's thrived is being in a situation where everyone has, like, likes him, and he's become perceivably likable. And I don't know if he's going to stick to that because of the way he left and the way he's like, you got to think about this. I struggle with this a lot because I was such a constant negative dickhead on Twitter all the time. And that's not how I feel I am now, even though you've seen the tweets. But you think about, like, how combative I used to be when we were at SDS, and how, like, just everything had to be, like, a thing. I was like that for a long time, and it felt like it's easy to, like, lean into that. Lane Kiffin has lived most of his professional career being the villain, and it's very easy to slip back into that. He needs to, like, really lean into the opposite of what's brought him the most success over the past 2 years.
I think that's accurate, but I just think that so many people have kind of been, I think they're just exposed to how fake all that was.
Yeah.
Personally. Hey, shout out Dante. He's got his question for us here. Appreciate the donation. Rank the quarterbacks next year. Top four returning quarterbacks. And he says, assume Trinidad gets his waiver, which he may not. I think you have to put Trinidad firmly in the top four.
Yeah.
Returning quarterbacks. Ty Simpson. What do you think about Ty Simpson? Is he going NFL or is he coming back?
That's going to be so interesting, because if they win against Indiana, his NFL prospect is going to skyrocket again. They might win. They might get to a national championship. And I don't think there's enough bad tape of Ty outside of, like, the way that people were blitzing him.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good tape on Ty, man. There's a lot of good tape on Ty.
Okay. Let's say he goes pro.
I wonder if Bama fans want that, because you don't want Keelan Russell to transfer. Right. And I don't know if he's going to sit for 2 years.
And how about Joey Aguilar? Are we counting him?
You think he's going to go pro?
No. He's applying to get another year of eligibility. Okay. And if he gets it, I think he'll be Tennessee's quarterback next year. Yeah. But if they don't know in time, they obviously have to move on. So let's say he gets it. Let's just say he's back at Tennessee. I'm just wondering, is he in your top four?
Aguilar?
Yeah.
No. He's probably five. I mean, like, because he turns the ball over too much. But right. Trinidad. Well,
I mean, that's fair. But I'm just saying, should we include him? So who's your top four? Trinidad, whether he's at Ole Miss or LSU, I think those are
for sure. Trinidad, Arch, Gunner,
Money Mateer.
Hold on, don't say anything. Let me think for a second, because I know where I want to go with this, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to or not. I'm just kind of going through the teams here. Mizzou's going to have Taylen Green's gone from Arkansas. Mizzou's going to have a new quarterback. Mississippi State. I do like that kid from Mississippi State, but he's not top four. Lenora Sellers.
Right. I was waiting for you to get to that. I think Sellers, I think he's much better than people realize.
Lenora Sellers in this offense that he's going to have with Kendall Briles.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. Because here's the thing. I don't think anyone doesn't like Lenora Sellers. Maybe some of the fans in South Carolina don't, but I don't think anybody else doesn't like Lenora Sellers. And watching him have to be limited and just with so much restraining play calls and like offensive identity and mindset that Mike Shula had was awful for everyone. Like you want to see that guy be the Lenora Sellers we saw against Mizzou last year, against Clemson in the fourth quarter last year, or at times you saw even this year. Like you want you want that guy to be Lenore Sellers, like the Superman, put the cape on and go out there. And I think what SEC fans, and I'll speak for all of them, would want to see, just like any college football fan, is, yeah, I would love to go see that guy put on a cape and go win 7 to 8 games for a team that is non-threatening to me, that isn't going to win a title, but I will tune in as much as possible to watch them play because of that kid. That's what you want to see out of him. And I think you're going to get that out of him with Kendall Briles.
I'll say
Marcel Reed's up there too. I forgot about him. Bo,
I didn't forget about him. Give me Trinidad, Gutter, Joey Aguilar, and Money Mateer. That's my top four.
Yeah,
that's right. All right. Hey, how about I really wanted to ask you. Wait, let me ask you about these games real quick. Yeah, well, that too. I know you never got a chance to go. But what's your thoughts on the early lines for the quarterfinals?
Yeah.
We've got Ohio State favored by 10 over Miami. Does that feel about right?
No, it's way too high. That's the most shocking one, I think, of all of them.
Okay. How about Oregon, Texas Tech? Oregon by 1.5.
Wrong team's favored in that one. I think Texas Tech, like, here's what I've noticed with Texas Tech this year is every single game, the big game they've had, Utah and in the two BYU games, so all three of them this year, what you've seen from Vegas is them begging you to take the other team. Like, BYU at 11.5 is like, oh, that's way too high. Like, BYU is a top 10 team. How would they be a 10.5 point underdog? And then it was 13.5 in the title game in a rematch. And it was like, that's way too high too. Like, hold on. Okay. So anyway, all of those things, I think factored into like Vegas kind of begging you to take the other side of Texas Tech, and all Texas Tech did was fucking destroy teams except for that one game against Utah. So, and that was the backup quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think that's the better team. The Miami Ohio State game, we've given way too much credence to how good Ohio State is this year. I think they're a very talented team. I think it's a massive disservice to how good of a team Miami also is at the positions that are key to win national championships. They are great on the defensive line. Dude, one of the best things I think for college football right now, it is like I love to see, for the most part, I want to see good teams in, but it's fun to see like historic brands and nostalgic brands being in these big games. So like Miami being in it is fun because a lot of teams hate Miami. But when you look up that fucking defensive line and almost every single one of the players is wearing a single digit, just a huge fucking former five-star from South Miami in a single digit defensive line. And the only white guy on the defensive line was wearing number 99. I was like, this is the best defensive line in the history of football. It is the best defensive line in the history of football. They're the 70 Steelers. So I think that'll be a much closer game. It's in Dallas. And I know Ohio State's going to be mad. They're coming off a loss and blah, blah, blah. The other one, man, I think there's two outcomes for Bama, Indiana. I think Bama can eke by Indiana somehow, or Indiana's going to beat the fucking daylights out of Alabama. And
are you going to Rose Bowl? Well, I guess not if you're going to the other one.
Well, I'm not. Yeah, that part sucks too. But I was also really hoping that's like the number one thing on my bucket list is
Rose Bowl.
Going to the Rose Bowl. I'm not going to do not ever fucking clip this or I'll kill you. But like on my last engagement, are like, tie the knot, like, here's our wedding gift request, like our registry, the only thing I asked for was Rose Bowl tickets. And I was told I was not allowed to ask for that this time around for a number of reasons, I'm sure. And so
clip that. It does it automatically if I say clip that.
Don't do that. That would go over very bad with me.
I'll send it just to her parents.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, brother. No, I mean, like, I've always wanted to go to the Rose Bowl. It's the number one thing on my bucket list. I think with that game, man, I have not, as the game gets closer, I'll find a way to talk myself into Alabama having a chance. I just think Indiana's so good up front, especially defensively. I think Mendoza's really good, and I think they have enough talent that they can match up really well with Alabama. The thing, I think DeBoer's a really good coach when it comes to scheming against top. Yes, I like that. I think that he's really good against scheming on the road, especially against top 10 teams and ranked opponents and all those things. I just don't think there's a bigger asshole left in this fucking playoff or maybe in all of college football than Kurt Cignetti. And I think that he has this ability to convince himself that everyone else is out to get him, where he's like, he has the Jordan thing, like the Michael Jordan thing, where he has to like motivate himself, like, so-and-so said this about me. And it's like, no, they didn't. And he's like, yeah, they did. And I'm out for fucking blood. That's Cignetti. And like, I saw Indiana fans already posting about it. They were like, they wouldn't let him do anything besides coach receivers for 4 years. He had to go be a Division II head coach because they wouldn't promote him. And you're like, where would he have been promoted to? Would he have been defensive coordinator over Kirby Smart or offensive coordinator over fucking Lane Kiffin? And so Cignetti, though, I think is going to convince himself that, like, that the whole state of Alabama tried to keep him down and maybe, you know, slept with his wife, and he's going to fucking destroy Alabama. It's going to be terrible.
What about Sugar Bowl? Georgia favored by a touchdown. I'd say that feels about right, but it wouldn't stun me either if like Ole Miss won outright.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard for me to get a take on this one that doesn't feel like I'm just like sitting on the fence, and I love sitting on things. And so it's one of those things where like it's hard to beat a team twice. Georgia knows that better than anybody after what we saw in the SEC championship game. But then you look at the thing, they won by 8 last time, but that was on the road. This one, I do think it's going to be much more of a home crowd for Ole Miss than Georgia. I think it's going to be about like a 60-40 or 70-30 split, to be honest, for Ole Miss fans. And I think that it's going to be like Georgia's got an extra a week to prepare, which is dangerous for a coach that's as good as Kirby Smart for sure. I do feel like Georgia is kind of like I thought about this today. Georgia is like all year we've had all this chaos. Like, who's going to win the SEC? There's 5 teams in the playoff. Like, bam, I already beat them, and they're obviously very susceptible. And they almost lost to Tennessee, and they almost lost to Florida, and it's like all these things, and they just kept kind of winning and putting their head down. And then when all the coaching carousel shit started happening, all this other off-field college football chaos started happening, and then they argue with Notre Dame, Georgia's been sitting there the whole time. And they are exactly where they want to be and where they expect to be. So there's a part of me that thinks they're going to come out and win this game easily. And there's another part of me that sits there and thinks, like, I don't think that they're, like, I think Ole Miss is going to come out and throw the kitchen sink at them. And I can easily see it being Georgia down 10-14, nothing, like in the first half before they get it going because of and we've seen that from Kirby at times, dude. Like Kirby, Cole Kubik put this out there. You know it better than anybody as a Tennessee fan. Tennessee scored first on Georgia in each of the last 6 games against them. Like, I think Kirby's record at one point this year was like 28-3 against teams that have scored first on Georgia since 2020. And when I heard that, my first thought was, that means that 31 teams in his last 77 games had scored first on him. Like, and you think about how good the defenses have been. That's a sounding to me. That's kind of the script I think is going to play out. But it's hard for me to think that Georgia's going to lose that game. I don't even know if I answered your fucking question.
No, I don't think you did. But when we were talking quarterbacks, there was a lot of good comments. Is Diego Pavia, is he too old for the NFL? And a lot of people said he's going to be the best quarterback at Popeyes next year.
He's going to be in the USFL taking the fucking Memphis Sting boats or whatever they are to like the semifinals and him talking about winning, just grabbing his dick at the home crowd of 1,200 people at San Antonio.
Hey, I put this in the title too, just for you, because I know you like to talk some Auburn here. Is Auburn burning here? Does Golish know what the hell he's doing? A lot of, I believe 20 plus transfers out.
There's two that I think that Auburn – like, I think Auburn fans would ultimately be fine if there were two names that stayed. And I don't know how they're going to keep one of them.
Deuce and Cam?
Cam and Deuce Cam. Yeah, Deuce Knight. Yeah. So I don't know.
That's why I said Deuce and Cam.
Yeah.
Same thing.
So Cam's different than what Mike's saying, a little bit different. He's got – that's a good opinion. I get it. But my thought process is more Cam Coleman and then Deuce Knight, quarterback. We don't really talk about it much, but – yeah, those two guys. I think that if they somehow kept them, I don't know how they're going to do that, man. I don't know if they're
so. Here's the conversation behind scenes. I have this on good authority, right?
Yeah.
Where Golish, he's been telling all these quarterbacks, "Hey, I'm bringing in Brown, whatever his name is. He's coming, right?" So Deuce Nice is sitting here saying, "Well, you only get paid essentially if you have experience, if you have tape, right?"
Mm-hmm.
how am I going to get that? Is it going to be a fair competition when you're bringing in someone that you know intimately, you can run your system? I mean, how in the hell am I expected to beat him out? And then we're let's say he sticks it out and he sits. We're in this literally the same position next year, where year two will be a huge year.
Right.
Are we going to go all in on someone that has no starting experience?
That's
or
a good point.
Are we going to bring in the next John Mateer or whatever, you know, just as an example? But
yeah.
And I think that's a fair that's what Deuce Nine is weighing right now.
Well, and one of the comments I heard from somebody close to Auburn was I think that there's a path to where this would be a very easy decision for Deuce Nine to leave. And there's several schools that he was interested in out of high school that he wanted to go to, but most of the schools that he would want to go to now, I think that they already have a quarterback. And so it's like, where's he supposed to go? Like where would be the landing spot for him? He doesn't fit Tennessee's offense. Even if Aguilar's gone, you guys are probably going to get Sorsby anyway.
What about LSU? Kiffin liked him a lot.
That could be. I think that they're going to take a big swing at a big name. I think they're going to try to get Trinidad or Sam Leavitt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I literally don't know anything about, I don't follow these other teams, right? But I'm just going to say a name, like a North Carolina or something. Go get film. Hell, he could come back to Auburn in a year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He needs to get out there. He needs to see, people need to see him on the field.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I think what you said is a really, really good point. It's the first one you've made really all season, but I think that's, I do think it's a really good point in terms of like, what is he supposed to do? Like, if you're not going to pay him, are you going to play him enough? And also, I'm all for giving the guy that you've already seen perform at a high level a shot. I'm all for it. But let's look at this real quick. Are we sure that kid, Brown, what's his name? Barion? That's not Barion Brown, obviously.
I want to call him Barion Brown all the time, but
all the time. Hold on.
I think it's Byron. Byron Brown.
Byron Brown. Are we sure that his total, so his ceiling is somehow better than Deuce Knight's? I'm all for bringing the guy with you that knows your offense and can prove that he can win. I get all that, and that's a security blanket that's been used 1,000 times. Fully understand that. But are we convinced that this is the guy that's going to somehow take you to like 8 wins versus a guy like Deuce Knight, who's a former 5-star that he's played one game. I know it was against Mercer, but all he did was put up 401 yards of offense and 6 touchdowns. Like, in my opinion, and I'm this is just me personal, my own personal opinion, I think the ceiling with Deuce Knight is much higher, because you have to look at this in more ways than like, you're already given the leash. Auburn fans are not going to be happy if you go 5-7 next year, which I don't expect them to do. But I do think in year two, that's where this job is going to be more on the line. Like you were saying earlier, it's like why would you look so limited in your thinking and so like right in front of you if you're going to bring in a quarterback that only has one more year of eligibility, has not played on this level in the Power Four, instead of taking a guy like Deuce Knight, who's electric, can do all sorts of things that this other kid can't, and will hopefully be a good fit in this offense. But if he's not in year one, year two, the sky could be the limit. In this situation with Brown, year one is it. That's all you're going to get with him. And then you have to, like you said, start all over the year after that.
Right. And it, same thing. Shout out Steven. I'm sure you're all over this. Aaron Nolan leaving Carolina.
Yeah.
Same deal. You got to get on the field to show people what you're worth.
I will tell you that I think Aaron Nolan,
he could be back at Carolina for 27. I mean, that's probably unlikely, but I'm just saying, like in the world we live in now, that's feasible.
My personal feeling on Aaron Nolan, and this is just my own speculation and assumption and what I've seen from covering that team, I think that he has the fourth highest upside of the four quarterbacks they have. I was very excited when he first got there, former 5-star recruit, like seemingly a ton of talent. I think that a lot of people are more excited about what Cutter Woods could do. I think that a lot of people are probably in that building are more excited about what Landon Duckworth can do. in the future. Because, and I think the ultimately, I think him and Duckworth are almost too similar of where they're probably at even right now. Because that's the biggest thing too, is Aaron Nolan, he's a former, you know, five-star recruit in some books and like, or some, what do you call it, recruiting services, and an Elite 11 type kid. Like, he was like a very talented kid, but he was not a kid that was physically ready to come in and start anywhere, whether it be Ohio State or play at South Carolina. Otherwise, he would have. Otherwise, like, if Aaron Nolan was that good, he wouldn't have fucking, he wouldn't have been behind the 18th year senior Luke Doty or Cutter Woods.
Yeah, like I said, you know better than I. But just point being, you got to get out there. You got to get some experience. You got to show people what you can do.
Yeah.
And in this era, you could just transfer back. I mean, we have seen that a number of times in college football.
Yeah.
Hey, shout out to Ole Miss. He says, just go get your backup from Ferris State. I mean, it works.
Genius move, to be honest. Genius move.
All right. Hey, any final thoughts here as we head into the holidays?
What is
Marler going to be doing for Christmas? That's what people want to know.
What am I going to be doing
besides sitting on things?
I think we're going to have a pretty low key Christmas. I do love this time of year. I always say this is my favorite week of the year, favorite like 10-day span of the year, because you don't know if it's fucking Wednesday or February, and you're just watching meaningless bowl games after meaningless bowl games. We are going to do Christmas here
in Baton Rouge.
In Baton Rouge.
What's the temperature like for a Christmas in Baton Rouge,
dude? It fucking pisses me off so much. I have. Marlo's on the edge? No, I'm not.
I wasn't even going to acknowledge that one.
It's 76 degrees today.
Ugh.
It stays between 74 and 77 all week. Thursday is 74. It's bullshit.
Are you sure this is America we're talking about?
I hate it, dude. It's like being in Florida, but you know what sucks too, Mike? If you look outside right now, it's like muggy and it's like overcast and gray. So it feels like it should be cooler. And then you walk outside and it's hot and muggy as fuck. It's terrible. It's fucking terrible. You're like trying to like, everyone's like forcing themselves into like sweatshirts and like winter-esque clothing. And you're just sweating my tits off out here. It's terrible. Marler was in the North Tower. My mom was supposed to be in the South Tower. So if we're making 9/11 jokes, maybe we fucking cool off on that, because 9/11 jokes aren't that funny in the first place.
Let's pivot to any food or drink that you're really looking forward to. 9/11.
You know what I do love is pecan pie always. Yes. I love doing, so this is, I'm probably gonna be called gay for this, but I've been called gay for less. So, and been gay for less, you know what I mean? One of my favorite things I do every year, I make sugar cookies for like my mom's recipe and this homemade icing.
Ooh.
And then
one was thinking that, but you.
Yeah, no, I make decorative sugar cookies for all my friends. So like, I'll do it for like our coworkers and shit. And it'll be like little football players of like LSU and shit like that, since we're in Baton Rouge now.
Oh, wow. Hey, Tolkien, appreciate you. $5. Marler, a scale of 1 to 10. What are the chances Ole Miss wins it all? 1 being 100%, 10 being, it's fucking happening.
I don't know how to answer that. I'm so confused.
Literally any number you give, it means they're going to win it at all.
I avoid most scales in general right now, but I will say 1 out of 10, 10 with them winning. I'm not basing off of your scale, Tolkien. That was fucking ridiculous. I would say a 3. Yeah. And I would love to see it happen, to be very clear.
Yeah, they're on the hard side of the bracket. You know what?
Yeah, the hard side.
they could conceivably, I mean, look at it this way, Chris. They could conceivably beat Georgia and Ohio State and not win the national championship.
That's insane.
Right? I mean,
also, do you feel like the playoff is like one round too long?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And they want to expand this fucking thing.
That's unbelievable. I also think that they can expand it. I think they could expand it in the first round and have it not be – they could expand it to 16 and still have it be the same amount of weekends, right?
I think they would have to do away with the conference championship week.
Yeah.
Which one really cares about anymore anyway, except for Greg Sankey. Fair.
I would love to see them go back to like an 11-game schedule, and then which they won't do either. But I do like the idea of the conference championship thing being like 1 versus 2, 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5. The other one I was going to say is I do think that the biggest change I want to see outside of the G5 playing their own playoff, because we can't watch it anymore. Like, it's just not – I know there's been blowouts from other teams. I get all that. But this year especially needs to be the reasoning why, because it's like we could have had Texas or Vandy, but they probably would have put Texas in there. We could have had Texas versus Ole Miss and Notre Dame, Oregon in the first round on top of all those other games. And I think that the one thing I want to see more than anything from a change standpoint, I want to see the first two rounds of this thing be in a, what do you call it? The first two rounds of this thing be played on home campuses. And if you're worried about how that's going to affect, since there's, what is it, six different New Year's Six bowls and then like locations of the Orange, Cotton, Sugar, Fiesta, Rose, and Peach. If you're worried about those schools missing out on like whatever you call it, either get a play-in game to play in one of them, or do that along with like the G5 national championship in their own playoff to be played in another one as well. And that way you can still get people traveling, going to those places. Because right now, like last year, Mike, that Arizona State Texas game was awesome. Like to watch, those tickets were going for like $12 a piece, and that's not what they want to see either. So,
right, and no one gives a damn about the fans in any of this.
Yeah, I know.
But let's just say, let's say you're one of these teams. Like, let's say you're an Alabama fan, right? You just had to pay to go to Norman. I can't imagine what those tickets would have cost. Yeah. The Indiana Rose Bowl. I mean, that's going to cost you a shit ton. Semifinals, wherever that is, if they make it national. I mean, who the hell can afford to go to these games?
Do you remember in 2018? Because I actually was fortunate enough to go to all three of these. Because when we were at SCS, we did a thing with Bud Light where they sent me, for some reason, they sent me on a thing with Bud Light to go hand out Bud Lights to tailgates and shoot video. So we did Georgia-Auburn.
Bud Light was the one that did the trans stuff, right? So it kind of makes sense that they picked you.
That's right. Trans cans. So they sent me to the Georgia-Bama game. I'm sorry, the Georgia-Auburn game, then the Iron Bowl, then the SC Championship game. Then we had to go to the Orange Bowl as well. And then I went to the National Championship game. And that was a year where Bama played in the SC Championship against Georgia. It was like 1-4. And they had that dramatic comeback with Jalen Hurts. Then you go to the Orange Bowl, which was in Miami. And then you had to go out to Santa Clara out in California. So you're traveling all over the place. And that was just in a four-team playoff. I did all three of those things. I won a fucking game show that year to pay off my student loans and spent most of the money on travel for that. So like, I can't imagine a real adult making these decisions to go to Oklahoma, to Pasadena, then to what, like whatever the next round would be, and then the fucking national championship with Miami. It's just crazy.
Wait, so you still have student loans because of that?
No, I can't.
Shit. Okay. Vince on Friday, appreciate your donation. Elijah Robinson, defensive linebacker coach, back at A&M, number one draft class, coming soon, baby. Merry Christmas, Giggum. LSU wanted that guy. Do you know that?
Yeah, I think that LSU getting Lucas is a much better pick. Also, did he develop any of those players? Because didn't most of that class end up transferring out or not playing very well?
That's true.
All right, I gotta go.
Hey, one last thing. Perfect Christmas gift from Marla, just in case any of the audience is out there and they want to send you something.
Tennessee Legends. Oh, for me?
Yeah. And you better not say a wood shavings in a bottle.
Don't send me wood shavings in a bottle. I mean, bourbon's always nice. Like, we do need to get like a nice, you know what? A setup for my background, like better lighting or a better camera. That would be ideal.
They're not sending you that.
Oh, then bourbon. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Merry Christmas, buddy.
Merry Christmas, dude.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.